What's going on, everybody? Brian Fritz here on the Between the Ropes podcast. Thanks for listening to the podcast, subscribing, downloading, all of that jazz. Another busy week when it comes to wrestling. Mike Sempervivi from Wrestling Observer is going to be joining me here in a few minutes. Always enjoy the conversation with Mike, and there's a lot to talk about from this past weekend and this coming week as well. So last Friday, we got the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor show, and then over the weekend, it was the New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed show from Long Beach. So we could talk about those two events. I want to kind of compare those two things, where Ring of Honor and where New Japan are right now as they continue their working relationship, but still run separate shows, obviously. We've got the week in WWE. On Saturday morning, we've got the Super Showdown event from Australia, which starts at 5 a.m. Eastern. And believe it or not, I am going to be live blogging that show for Sporting News. So if you want to wake up early on Saturday, 5 a.m. Eastern, I will be live blogging Super Showdown. So please wake up, a few of you, to make it feel like I'm actually doing some work that people are following along with. You know, I don't mind doing that. I don't mind waking up early to live blog. And we like to live blog the big WWE events. I typically do that for Sporting News. I actually didn't do it for Hell in a Cell because I was working at my day job, which is helicopter photojournalist, fancy way to say cameraman up in the helicopter for a news station. That's what I'm doing here in Raleigh now. And I was doing hurricane coverage, so I couldn't do Hell in a Cell, unfortunately. But I will be around on Saturday morning to do Super Showdown, the huge show from Australia, beginning at 5 a.m. Eastern. So please wake up and follow along with my live blog. So a couple of other things to hit on with Mike we want to discuss, especially when it comes to ratings. I normally don't talk about ratings, but I did want to bring it up with him because WWE ratings are being discussed this week. Plus, I want to look ahead to some other things that are coming up, you know, when it comes to Ring of Honor, and especially with New Japan, when it comes to WWE and some of the bigger shows that, you know, we're in the fall right now. And, you know, we're always looking ahead towards bigger shows, whether it's Wrestle Kingdom, whether it's Royal Rumble, whether it's WrestleMania. And while I know that like WrestleMania is still 6 months away, and even Wrestle Kingdom is still what, 4 months away, 3 months away, whatever. So those shows are still a little far away, but we're kind of getting on the road to those to some extent, or starting to kind of figure out a couple of things. So I want to hit on that as well with Mike. So we'll get to all of that coming up here. Thank you to everybody that is supporting Between the Ropes and myself on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/between the ropes. Only $3 a month, $3 a month. You get the ad-free version of this weekly podcast. So please do that to support the podcast. That helps me out. Plus you don't have to listen to the podcast with ads, which I'm sure you probably like. So please do that. It means a lot. It helps support me as well, and allows me to keep doing the podcast and doing what I'm doing. And so please do that, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, just about everywhere you can find podcasts, you will find Between the Ropes. So please subscribe to the podcast and rate and review it, and follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Brian Fritz. You can find Between the Ropes there. It's at Between the Ropes. And also you can check out the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/between the ropes. If you go there, that's where I put up the post for questions every week, which I did. I'm taping this on a Thursday morning. I put that up on Wednesday, so you can leave your questions there. And that's where I'll get to the questions for the Q&A. So stick around after I get done talking with Mike, that I will once again do Q&A. That is kind of the regular thing now. I do my conversation with somebody else here on the podcast, and then I do some Q&A afterwards. So make sure you stick around for that. But right now, let's get to Mike. He's Mike Sempervivi from the Wrestling Observer website, Wrestling Observer Live, weekday afternoons from 3 to 4 Eastern, 12 to 1 Pacific. He somehow puts up with Brian Alvarez every day. I'm just kidding, Brian. I'm going to get heat for that, aren't I?
Possibly, but it's true.
Oh my God, you do put up with them though.
It's a struggle. I mean, my God, you don't, you know, yes, we work for Brian, and it is nothing but work being around Brian. I mean, listen to Filthy Tom. I mean, my God, you know, you were doing radio shows that with a guy that'll sell you out for, like, you know, the last like protein shake in the fridge, for heaven's sakes, you know, and we'll lose you a match in Crown Point, Indiana.
That is true. But Filthy Tom, I don't know. With Brian, at least you feel like there's a direction. With Filthy Tom, you're never sure exactly what direction you're going to go once the microphone's on.
That's like a lot of these fighters. You know, some of these guys, you look at them and you talk to them, man, those guys got it all together. I remember meeting George St. Pierre. It's like, my God, it's a number one. He's got an amazing charisma when you're close to him. I mean, he's got that kind of that funny look on his face too. But it's like, you know, it's just like he, and not a bad looking man. You know, he was a guy almost got like a glow around him. And, you know, it's like, man, he's got the suit on. Everything is together. No problem. Filthy Tom is just like, he's like a Coen Brothers character that just kind of like, you know, busts out at you, you know, and it's just he's one of those guys you look at. And it's like, well, he lives in Vegas and you look. Greg Maddux lived in Las Vegas. Okay. Everybody else, for the most part, that lives in Vegas, you're either an entertainer working somewhere or you're like somebody that's a candidate to end up on live PD. And Filthy kind of fits that. I mean, his name is Filthy.
He fits a couple of different things there.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it is a unique place to be. That's for sure.
Let's start off with some of the stuff from this past weekend, because we had the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor show on Friday night. Then we had the New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed show on Sunday. Both of them were pretty good shows. I preferred the New Japan show, but there was really nothing wrong with Ring of Honor, even though there were three ref bumps. I mean, three matches at ref bumps, which I'm not a fan of. But here was the bigger point that I wanted to bring up about this. Well, first of all, let's start there. Which show did you like more over the weekend?
That would probably be the New Japan show, because that's the one I watched all the way through.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to be aware. Yeah, I take that back. I did watch Death Before Dishonor all the way through, but it was after the fact. It was basically a couple days after where I was able to see the entire show and not just the main. And I'd already heard everybody opine about it and everything. And I'd already seen the New Japan show by that point. So it was just a show to me at that point. Unfortunately, I was not in the moment on it. And frankly, there was nothing that came from it that really reached out and grabbed me. And that's not good.
And that's the same with me. It's like, you know what? I figured that the main event was going to be really good. I mean, when you've got Jay Lethal and Will Ospreay, I'm like, this is going to be a really good match. And it was a really good match. But there was something about it. That show just didn't feel that important overall. I never felt like Ospreay was going to win the title. There was one spot in the match where you believed for a second. But outside of that, like leading up to it, I never thought like he's going to lose. You know, and that's kind of one of the things that I understand you've got shows to fill. You know, and it's not just a Ring of Honor thing. It's a New Japan thing. It's a WWE thing. But when you're putting out so much content sometimes and you've got like a really big championship match, there's a lot of times where I feel like I don't think there's a chance that the title is going to change hands here. And I can still enjoy the match, but it doesn't mean as much. It doesn't feel, you know, that important to me. And it almost feels like I can miss it if I don't have that feeling that a title change could happen.
Well, and New Japan is a great example sometimes on how you control your fans emotionally with a scenario or in a scenario where they know that belt's not going to change. But by the end of that match, or at least some point during that match, you pluck the strings enough on their emotions and their nerves where they kind of go, oh, and I didn't really feel that with Ospreay and Lethal. But again, I come into that a little bit biased, like I said, from the beginning, where it was just like, but again, let me not make excuses either. I mean, you know, Ospreay's in that match. It's like, he's in the junior heavyweight tournament for the IWGP title. And you can make this move, but it doesn't make any sense. And Jay Lethal's got a lot of stock built up, you know? So it's like, it was tough for me to lose it, but I will say this, Ospreay is still, boy, he still does a lot, but he was a lot more in a mode that I preferred him in with Jay. That's for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, to not get too far away from what you said, I bet you it was hard for a lot of people to release and think that anything was going to happen. There probably were other matches and other opponents you could have put against Jay, and played with a story or something like that, that maybe would have had more people watching. Because again, the crowd was pretty into it, and you didn't really, you know, it didn't come across as they felt deflated or didn't think a change was going to happen or anything like that. But most of the reaction that I've heard and how it felt to me, yeah, you know, it was hard to really lose yourself and think that main was going to end with a bunch of streamers and Will Ospreay and then the ROH title.
Right. And when I look at those two shows, the New Japan show just felt bigger on paper. It felt bigger when it played out. I know that they had a larger audience. I know they don't come to the United States that often, but it's the third time this year that they've been here. It's the fourth time overall. And it just has a little bit of a different feeling. And I don't know if it's because of the talent or whatever, but that was another show where they didn't even defend the heavyweight championship. They did defend the U.S. championship, and Cody is a new champion by being Juice Robinson. But that show just felt like a big deal. When I watched it, it felt like a bigger deal. And I think when looking back on it, it felt like a bigger deal. And the point that I wanted to make about it is, I just wonder where Ring of Honor and New Japan are going forward, because I think they're both in a very good spot. However, I feel like Ring of Honor really depends on New Japan a lot more. It's not like they would go away tomorrow if they didn't have a working relationship with New Japan and didn't have their talent on shows. But I just feel like if something happened there, that Ring of Honor would be hurt a lot more than New Japan would be hurt if they were not working with Ring of Honor anymore. And, you know, to me, New Japan is clear cut the number two company in the world. And I just look at those two shows and compare them, where they're kind of secondary shows for both promotion, but one definitely felt a lot bigger than the other.
I agree and I disagree. I think New Japan's in obviously in a much better scenario and situation than ROH is, but there was one real overwhelming thing that I got when the weekend was over, and that was these two companies are far, far better off working with each other and figuring out how to brand each other's shows in each country, because you had a far better reaction to that card than a lot of people did, because a lot of people had the emotion going into it and they were deep in their bag about this not being a quote unquote authentic New Japan show. And right. We can get into that. I think everybody heard my opinions many times on Observer Live. I really downplay that. I get it to a point, and I understand some of the mistakes that they've made. And I think they made a mistake with the card going back to Long Beach again for the third time. And, you know, on paper, I'm glad we've reached a point where the Golden Lovers against, you know, the Ishii and Okada, you know, those four guys are arguably the four most, you know, emotionally charged superstars in the world and four of the most popular guys in the world. When you have a match like that, and people are saying it's not a true main event. You know, it's like, I think maybe, you know, I'm happy we've hit that point where somebody could say that, you know, that's how great the scene is right now. But it's like, I mean, that's a really good show. And somebody's like, kind of like, you know, W.H. Park, you know, took the shots like that wouldn't even be Kurikan, or that would be Kurikan at best. It's like, I don't know about that. You know, again, this show was about the storylines, and I think a lot of those paid off. But again, you know, not to ramble on too much here, get back to the point I was making of, you know, Ring of Honor is so dependent on New Japan guys, and they are so dependent on that union of guys that, frankly, can make or break them. And I've tried to be very positive and you know, when it comes to who they've built up and, you know, the guys like, you know, who aren't Cody and who aren't the Young Bucks and who aren't Ospreay and Skrull. You know, the Jonathan Gresham is great. You know, Punishment Martinez was a, you know, obviously he's on his way to WWE, and I was not a massive fan of his, but I mean, he has been working at the Monster Factory and working his way up for a long, long time. It was nice to see him get a shot and go and do with it. You know, again, not everybody loved him as ROH TV champ or loved him as a big man as a threat, but like, at least they helped to build him up, and he wasn't top tier or anything like that, but like, he's gone. And some of the other guys, if they didn't have that core guys and they didn't have the New Japan guys, I mean, what would they be? And they need New Japan, and New Japan needs them, because, and this is going to be troubling because, you know, a Japanese company, it's hard to tell them what to do, no matter what market they're running. But I hope somebody gets to them, because if they had the ROH name attached to the show, then you wouldn't have to worry about being a quote unquote authentic New Japan show. You know, I am flabbergasted that people would, you know, well, where's Minoru Suzuki? Like, number one, you can't bring everybody onto the show in case something happens, and not even in case something happens, just for your own creative benefit, rotate guys. Not every big name should come over. Yes, on the on main events, on not main events, but WrestleMania weekend, sure, everybody comes over. But like, if you're going to come to the States, you got to leave people wanting more. And if you're going to, you know, to me, rotating guys, top name guys, yeah, that's good. That's number one. Number two, how do you know they didn't ask Minoru Suzuki and he said no? You know, when you don't tell Minoru Suzuki where to go, he tells you where he's going to go.
Right.
And then, like, three, all of those other people that haven't shown up on the show or weren't on the show, I mean, Tenkoji and Yuji Nagata. I mean, I love Yuji Nagata. I'd love to see him come all the time. But, like, does he sell one more ticket here? And, you know, SoCal Uncensored may not, but, like, you're not paying trans on them. You know, you don't
right. They all live show. Right where that show's at.
Yeah.
Same with Rocky Rivera. I mean, same with some of the other guys. They live right there.
Exactly. And if you just, to me, if you just have ROH on the bill, then you eliminate some of that. It can be an all New Japan show, but like, if you're going to have, I mean, Chris Sabin and guys like that, I mean, to me, if you just do that, you take some of that stuff with the New Japan stuff away. And I know somebody will say, well, it goes against their expansion and all that sort of stuff. I mean, come on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They still need ROH in here in the States. The MSG deal proved that. I mean, New Japan wasn't stopping WWE from stopping them.
Right. And I think
I tell you what, Sinclair and ROH's lawyers did. So that, I mean, to me, they're far better together. And this weekend with the buzz and some of the emotion and reaction around those shows, to me, that just galvanized that thought to me.
I agree. I think that they are better off working with one another. I just look at those two shows, and if I'm Ring of Honor, I'm sitting there going, okay, I feel like there was more of a buzz for New Japan guys. I feel like there's more of a buzz for the New Japan show. What can I do while keeping my working relationship with them, but help prop us up a lot more? Because we can sit there and we can talk about All In, and that was somewhat of a Ring of Honor show. I mean, and obviously it did more than 10,000 people, but you can make a claim. Obviously there was New Japan talent on there as well. You could sit there and look at like what Ring of Honor did over WrestleMania weekend and how, you know, the last couple of years, their show numbers have done even bigger than they've done before. But if I'm Ring of Honor, I'm sitting there going, okay, what can I do to get more people talking about my guys, my talent, my regulars, and rather than talking about the New Japan guys where, yes, we have a partnership with them and they're an important part of our show. But at the same time, I want some more ROH talk, especially like in a weekend like this, because it feels like, yeah, people are talking a little bit about Ring of Honor, but it feels like they're talking more about New Japan. Maybe that's just in my mindset. And I think where everything is at right now. But it just kind of feels that way. And if I'm Ring of Honor, I'm sitting there going, yeah, things are going well, but let's make sure that we really promote ourselves. Let's make sure that we're, you know, on the, you know, people are talking about us and we're front and center just as much as New Japan.
Yeah, I'm not in ROH's office scene, so I can't come up with an answer to this question in their voice. But like for both of these promotions, especially in New Japan, especially when they're running Southern California, especially wanting to run it so much, or all of California, frankly, where is this relationship with CMLL for both of these companies? Which would really provide ROH with a unique presence. If you like, I don't understand. And I think he's hurt right now and I'd have to go back and double check, but like Titan, even when he's not hurt, is a great talent that CMLL does not focus on per se all that much in comparison to a lot of other guys. Like use him, bring him up, house him at somebody's place, you know, bring up a couple guys from CMLL, and let them work up and down your shows. Because if nothing else, it at least provides you with a unique presence when it comes to ROH on the New Japan side. It gives you guys who hopefully can come up and legally and clear from over the border and also round out your shows and provide a little bit of a different look. And, you know, Soberano Jr. would have been a nice presence on the New Japan show. I mean, how cool would it have been to see him in the mix, you know, do something or fly around with somebody. I mean, it would have been awesome. But like that relationship, I think, really needs to be utilized for Ring of Honor on the regular, because it would provide them with a little bit of a different look and provide them with something special. I think that is, obviously it's not the answer, but it would certainly help, you know, bringing in guys, a Shingo being an example. And I have a feeling he's going to have an association with Los Ingobernables in the next couple of days. We'll find out, but like, if he's not, get him over here for 6 months. He is awesome. He is a guy that every single hardcore fan, I take that back, because we are in the Sinclair syndicated era. I'd say 75% of the people that are hardcore in the Ring of Honor, bringing him in and bringing in names like that when you can to spark some things, I think would be a really good idea. I would. You know, from there, the best thing they can do is just put their nose to the grindstone, try to continue to build that women's division, which, you know, Sumi Sakai, I think, is great. She came over to the States. You know, she's been here a long, long time now, and I know she does a lot of work, and this was a great Lifetime Achievement Award for her to have that Women of Honor world title. I mean, but is she really the person that should be holding the women's championship and should be the face of your women's division in your company? I don't. And that's not, again, it sounds like I'm shading her, and I don't want to, because I like to see her, but like, was she the best option, you know, of everybody out there on the scene, you know, to have that belt and to have it for this long and to continue to move forward? I don't know. You know, Kenny King is obviously a popular guy there, but like, he seems to get to a certain point, and he's been around a long time now, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know. The best thing they can do, I guess, with their Bruisers and Greshams and Shane Taylor, who's kind of dropped off the face of the earth, is continue to just try to build them up the best you can. They got Flip Gordon, who, for anything anybody ever wants to say about Bully Ray, and I will, you know, if provided the opportunity, because he won't hear it. He's blocked me on Twitter anyway, but that was for a show last week. But you know. But Bully, I think, has been great for Flip Gordon, being able to build him up and tell a story. I think Silas Young is fantastic, and I think utilized correctly, you know, can do a really good job. But they just, yeah, they need something to hit big time. And they need, number one, they need to develop more of their own homegrown talent fast.
That's the thing, they don't have to be
Vern Gagne about it, but you need to start pumping some guys out. Real goddamn fast, because you have had that place. You've had the dojo in Pennsylvania for a while. They've announced this deal where they are now we're working in concert with the Monster Factory and with Maryland Championship Wrestling and Glacier's group down there in Georgia, Ray Lloyd's group. And, you know, that's nice to release that press release and all. But like, you've been working with the Monster Factory for every how many years? Because the Monster Factory, Danny Cage is right there. Like, I mean, he's right there. So you've been working with them. You know, that's great. You put it on paper and made it shiny. But like, you know, if WWE still wants a guy or somebody else still wants a guy, they're still going to be your competition. You don't have an exclusive deal with them. Same thing with Maryland Championship Wrestling. You know, if WWE wanted Lio Rush and Patrick Clark, and they did, they just took them. So like, you can have this agreement, but like, what are you doing to develop these guys and get them out there and going forward? I mean, they could probably use some new eyeballs, and that's not like a shot against Delirious or anybody that works there, but like, and I'm not saying me, I'm just saying like some real pros, like somebody needs to take a real hard look at like what they're doing and like old Booker style, like what is going wrong here? Because there's obviously something wrong, because with the exception of that Bullet Club and with the exception of New Japan guys, when you strip those guys away, man, it gets real cold real fast. And
that's the whole thing right there to me is like when you don't talk about guys that are on both brands, when you don't talk about the Bullet Club guys, when you're not talking about Cody and you're talking about the Bucks in particular, then yeah, then I'm sitting there going, okay, you've got some really good talent, but a lot of it's guys that have been around for a while. And I agree. I think they could use a fresh approach. and I definitely could use some fresh talent that are in there and working some guys into the mix there. And that's something I think that they've been needing to do for a while. It's just whether or not they're really going to do it, you know. And the one thing that I will say too, when it comes to Ring of Honor and when it comes to New Japan from this past weekend and going forward, is that when the New Japan show got done and Kenny Omega was in the ring doing a promo, which he said he doesn't like scripted promos and he kind of got lost and that's why he doesn't like doing them. But Kenny was talking about how they're doing the triple threat match coming up on this coming Monday show, the King of Pro Wrestling show. So it's him and Kota Ibushi and Cody in this three-way, and they almost never do three-ways. But, you know, he talked about, you know, him and Ibushi, when they do a singles match, they've always sworn that it would be in a bigger arena. And I don't know if that means like the Tokyo Dome, if that means Madison Square Garden, whatever. But because they're not doing that right now, and I don't know when they're going to do it, it's obviously not going to be at Wrestle Kingdom. It makes me believe that Kenny is sticking around probably for another year. And then if those guys really have that pact that they've talked about, like the whole group when it comes to Bullet Club is staying together, like whatever decision they make, they're doing it together. That makes me believe that Cody and the Bucks and Hangman Page, at least for another year, are going to probably be doing what they're doing right now. I mean, do you get that sense as well?
Yes. Yeah,
I'm cool with whatever they want to do. I mean, whatever decision is right for them is right for them. And I understand the brotherhood and the pact and everything. To me, though, it's always kind of felt like
Cody, right for everybody.
Cody's not going to WWE right now. That now always felt like no. Paige has always felt like no. Omega's kind of the one I'm like, I could see it both ways. I've always kind of thought the Bucks would be the ones that say, we've done everything except go to WWE. And I'm sure we can all have our concerns about what they would, how they would be utilized there. But at the same time, I would also feel like it would cost a lot of money to get the Bucks there. And that's great for them because if they can go there, they can have the WWE experience. They're not going to be totally wasted for people that think that, but I, you know, it is what it is. Okay. We don't need to harp on that, but they would be paid very, very well. And I'm sure their merchandise would do very well. And that's great for them to make that kind of money that I would assume they'd go there. So I've always kind of felt like they would be, of all those guys, they make the most sense to go to WWE. If they don't want to go, that's good for them. It's on them. But that pact has always kind of felt a little bit weird to me. But when I saw what happened like this past weekend, and then I kind of wonder like, okay, are they going to do another all-in show? Because if they do that, would it make more sense for all of them to still be involved in that or not? You kind of look at the tea leaves here, and it's really starting to feel like, at least for another year, those guys are not going anywhere, and they're still going to be together at maybe Ring of Honor and New Japan, whatever indies they want to do, doing their own thing with an all-in show maybe. It feels like that's going to continue for another year.
I think so. I do. First, because if you take Kenny Omega, and even if you take him and you just drop him right in the middle of, he could main event WrestleMania. In 1 year, in 6 months, what do you think the relationship is going to be like between the artist Kenny Omega and Vincent Kennedy McMahon? I as an athlete, I think they would be all over him. I think as his work and his charisma, yeah. I mean, he's a walking, to me, he's still, there is a part of Kenny Omega that is cartoon, that is, it is so overdubbed Kung Fu Theater sometimes with him. You know, there was that match during the G1 with him and Tama Tonga that was like, if you had, it was one of those Kung Fu flicks, like one of those Wu-Tang Clan, you know, inspirational Shaolin movies that used to play at like noon on the independent station after wrestling went off, that was so badly overdubbed, had like the horrible blood and all that stuff. Like they were having that match. And the worst part was it wasn't even like that. It was like if you took one of those movies and made it into a comic book and you were reading it in the thought bubble, like that's how that match was. And I think there's a there's a part of Kenny Omega that just drives me nuts with that, but that's just me just kind of
backing. Well, I do wonder, like, if Kenny Omega's in WWE, like, what are his promos like? Will they will they let him do his no. tagline? No. They're not going to let him act like he's shooting a gun.
No, they might give him good night and whatever, but, like, still, they're going to want to own it, and, like, so they'll change that. So it's like, okay, there's Kenny Omega's prospects there. The Young Bucks, look, it makes all the sense for them to go, but it also, like, in the same breath, it makes no sense for them to go.
Exactly. It has to be a point where they have to feel like, okay, what else is there for us? Let's go and have that experience.
That it's literally just so you could say you went and go work for WWE. And I think almost for their lore at this point, for the amount of money that they made, for the attention that they've got, the fact that they're the reason that all this happened. Cody is a lot of it, but let's be honest, the train of the Indies and the train of the Young Bucks, you know, left the station and was humming a long time before Cody, you know, jumped off the WWE and transferred onto board. So,
about the tag team division in WWE and what's going on there. If the Bucks come over there, they would be handsomely compensated.
They would. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then again, you wonder what the relationship would look like 6 months or a year away. Cody, obviously, you know, him in this incarnation, would be something that they would run with. Now, again, how long before, you know, he would become stale or something like that? I think it would take much longer. I think, you know, those people that he's got enough will built up, I think, with everyone, where I think he would be by far the most unsinkable. And let's be honest, for WWE's brass, I mean, he's the most tangible person, and he'd be the one you'd want to take care of the most, because frankly, I mean, of anybody, they would see the most in him, which then moves me to Marty Scurll, who I don't think would last there. I mean, he would last there for as long as he would last there, but I don't see a lot of greatness coming out of him when you got a bunch of guys. You know, if the UK deal had taken off, that would be one thing, but let's be honest here. I mean, they got talent coming out of their ears. Scurll, frankly, at that point is just another guy, and he's got like an interesting gimmick, but again, you know, he's just another guy there. I hate to say that. And then there's Adam Page, who, you know, if the worst part for Ring of Honor was the fact that New Japan liked Adam Page so much, because then you could look at him and be, you know, as more of a guy that you may have in your future. But I mean, the reality is New Japan looks at him with such stars in their eyes, and I'm sure down the line, WWE, there are people there that look at him the same way they were looking at Adam Page, the same way they were looking at Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly and guys like that, and just salivating over putting him in the mix initially at NXT and then watching him rise up, because he's a goddamn star. And I'm regionally partial to him coming out of Virginia and being able to see this ascent with this kid. But, like, you know, he's going to be a star, but just, you know, for him to leave now and jump into WWE, I mean, yeah, you know, again,
it's not his time yet. It's not his time then.
But yeah, I mean,
he doesn't want to do that yet. I don't think Paige, of all the people, I think he's the one probably least interested in going to WWE right now.
Well, especially because he's got, I mean, again, he seems to have options, and he's one of those guys, just for me, my own personal selfishness, like, he, in my opinion, would be better off. One, I get to see him a lot more, do a lot more different things, but, like, also, he could use that seasoning to continue on to grow and go where the Owens and Genericos and a lot of these guys had a chance to go in the past. I mean, he's still a baby in this thing. Let him continue to round out. So when he does get to you, because you can pay everybody what you want, and sooner or later, if you wanted to, you could have him. You know, when that time truly comes, he is going to be more ready to help you out in all sorts of ways. So, you know, when you look at that whole group, it's like, you know, people, it's fun to think about fantasy booking them like it's, you know, the game 2K19 or it's Extreme Warfare Revenge or something like that. But when you really think about some of the people that have gone up there, I mean, look at the Hardys and look at what they had going behind them. It's a completely different situation with what Impact had going on and stuff like that. But I think some of those same things would apply where it's like, man, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega are here. And then in a month, it's going to be like, man, yeah, man, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega came here.
Right.
We like the past again, you know. So, you know, they're a group that's far better off basically being look, if they can make a union for these guys on the indie scene, because there's the other thing that hurts Ring of Honor too. And let's not forget, you know, there's a real life business thing where people don't want to put pen to paper with Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor as a business and as a company doesn't necessarily want to put you on TV if you haven't put pen to paper with them. And I get that. And I understand that. But I think for their own good, you know, Jeff Cobb probably should have been there a long time ago. You know, guys like that where, you know, maybe you should think a little differently on this, because so what if they jump and go to WWE? Who cares? Like,
right.
Obviously,
they're still on your TV. That makes you feel like a bigger deal if they came through you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. There are so many things that, yeah, to me, you could do with guys who aren't under contract and utilize them in ways. And I know nobody wants to be hurt or anything, but like, I don't know. There's got to be a better way to bridge the gap a little bit, because again, you pull those names off of there, you pull the New Japan guys off, and you pull off the, you know, the little core union of the Golden Lovers and the Bucks and Cody and Skrull and pull them out. And it's like, man, you know, if you could insert at the time, Matt Riddle, well, I guess you'd take the WWN guys and take them out of it, but anybody else working AEW, PWG, coming out of anybody's school, I mean, you know, there's got to be some middle ground that everybody can work in.
Real quick, I want to do some predictions as we look ahead, because now we're kind of getting into this meaty time of the year, especially for New Japan, and we're getting to Wrestle Kingdom. So real quick, I wanted to predict Wrestle Kingdom, what we think the lineup's going to be for that. So I would assume, Kenny Omega against Hiroshi Tanahashi, that will stay for the championship. Jay White against Tetsuya Naito, or no, excuse me. Who's he going to face?
Jay White?
Yeah. Because I think it's going to be Naito against Jericho.
It'll be Naito against Jericho, because then you can finally go ahead and close the book on that one. You would probably... Again,
Okada against Jay White. That's right.
That's the thing. That's what I was going to say, is it depends on where you want to go with Okada, because if you have... You could have a big outsider come in and want to take a shot at Okada. You could do the basically the blow off of the chaos destruction, and you know, you could do Jay White and Okada, but you could do Jay White for a title if you want to at that point, you know, slide him into a title match somehow. I mean, you could do that as well too, but as it stands right now, you know, Okada and him, Okada probably getting his revenge on Jay White and on Gedo at the Dome.
Yeah, that makes the most sense.
That to me would probably make the most sense. And then
what do they do with Kota Ibushi and Cody? I mean, do they do another match at the Dome? Because they've done one before, but it would be bigger, you know, this time around.
You could, I guess. But that they've kind of put that story to bed. And it
they're doing the triple threat, you know, coming up here on the Monday show. So do they go back to that? That's, I guess we'll find out, obviously, you know, come Monday, but
true. But you know, you figure the triple threat is there obviously just cause you're not going to get the singles match and you got to wait to insert Cody. But like, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to have a thing where Cody defends the NWA title against Kota Ibushi,
could do that.
No, it would be interesting at least.
But I think we feel like we know, we have a pretty good sense of at least the top two, maybe top three matches at Wrestle Kingdom. And then we'll kind of figure out where everybody else fits. Now, here's another thing too. So the show that they're doing on Monday, King of Pro Wrestling, they're doing Chaos against Los Ingobernables. But Los Ingobernables have a to-be-announced member of their eight-man tag team match. So do you think that could be Neville? Because, okay, so we saw Neville over the weekend. You know, what show was that he was a part of? It was
The Dragon Gate
Dragon
show.
Gate show. Yeah.
The thing with that is where I don't think it's going to be Neville, because I think it's going to be the guy he beat up. And to me, it makes a lot of sense. And there was, when it was announced that they made very clear that Shingo is leaving, and he's going to have his last match on, you know, whatever day it was here a couple days ago. Because when that happened, there were people that, and I don't know if they were just speculating if they were just hoping amongst hope or if they had some intelligence in a manila folder to go with this. But it popped up that, like, boy, this would be a nice time for the newly cleared Pac to come back to a place where, you know, he was king. You know, he's got a Japanese wife and blah, 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 blah down the line. And it's like, whoo, okay. And then it happened.
Right.
Okay, well, Shingo's gone. Shingo's got a connection there with Los in there. There is some feels there. So to me, it makes the most sense for Shingo to be that guy that, you know, carries on that jacket of Hiromu or carries on that role of Hiromu. Obviously not exactly in the same way, but like that brash dude, you know, I think you're going to see Shingo Takagi be that guy with X. Now, this could, you know, this is me speculating. This is me just kind of throwing it out there because they could go completely left field and have somebody do it. You know, they could have Dragon Lee, you know, take the place of Hiromu. They could do a lot of different things, you know, but I just think that Shingo looks to be the guy on paper. There's a fan side of me that would love to see Pac in the mix in the junior heavyweight mix once everything settles down. But to be honest with you, I think his home is Dragon Gate, and I think that's where he should be. And I think, frankly, Dragon Gate could use him right now and could use that attention in English-speaking countries because, you know, they were hot for a long time, and they still have a very loyal and strong and devout fan base. But a lot of the shine off of them, because of a lot of other things and a lot of, you know, with the British scene as hot as it's ever been, with more people knowing WXW and Walter in Germany, than there's ever been. Obviously, New Japan's ascension up, All Japan having some life again. Noah had some things going on. DDTs were like, they just got lost in the mix. And yeah. Pac being there, I think, is really could really, really help them out. And I think he's better served to be there than being just another really talented dude in New Japan.
Let's get into some WWE stuff. So Super Showdown's taking place Saturday morning. I'm waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to live blog this for Sporting News. Are you going to wake up and watch the show live?
I will probably, because of my schedule, I will probably be up and watching that show live, then take a nap and then football it up for the rest of the day. But yeah, I think I'll be, might be out here with you.
So they've announced 10 matches for the show. Do you think we're going to see any titles change? I think there's a chance of one, but I doubt it.
Oh, I do. I absolutely think the cruiserweight title is going to change.
That would be the one that I look at because yeah. Buddy Murphy against Cedric Alexander, and Buddy is, you know, from Australia. So I think there's a chance of that one happening, but I don't think we're going to see the SmackDown Women's Championship change hands. I don't think we're going to see the SmackDown Tag Team Championships change hands. I don't think WWE Championship is going to move. Yeah, those are the title matches. So I don't think we're going to see any of the other ones.
You know, I'm not sure how deep the match listing is for Crown Jewel, but you know, Cedric and Buddy. I think Buddy was a great character remake, and I thought they did a really good job. And there wasn't much early on with 205 Live that was very intriguing. You know, unless you really liked Enzo and that goofiness. But Buddy, you know, that was a great character revival from him, and nothing against Cedric, but he's held the belt for a while now. It is what it is. And I think this is just a good chance to maybe, you know, again, reward Buddy Murphy for being a good soldier there. And instead of beating somebody in their hometown, I mean, have a great match, have him win, get the big pop and see what you can do. I mean, look, what's the worst that happens? He drops it back to Cedric. He drops
right.
it back to DJ. I mean, you can always do the redo all over again. It's no problem. But why not see what the hell you can do in front of hopefully, 60,000 people or whatever that pop once that hand comes down for the three? I think if there's going to be another title change, it's going to be the New Day and Cesaro and Sheamus just because. And this is why I was asking about when it came to the roster for Crown Jewel is because you could do that and then flop it back the next week and not miss one beat, you know, or a couple of days later, whatever it is, and not miss a beat whatsoever. And I think you could do that if you wanted to, if you just wanted to have that change, have two changes on one show and then have a change in when they go to Saudi Arabia too, hey, you know, why not? Because
well, Crown Jewel's sure not for another month.
Oh, so it's oh, that's right, because November 2nd. Yeah, right, because then that's yeah, that's right, because then that's closing in on the a couple days after the
Evolution.
Women's yep, the Evolution,
it's 6 days after Evolution.
Yeah, so I mean, look, you know, and again, if I'll say this, if Cesaro and Sheamus win that belt before they go to Saudi Arabia, because I could see New Day getting a massive pop.
Oh yeah,
you know, winning the title, and you know, at some point, you're just going to want to flop the belts just because that's what you do. And I think they Cesaro and Sheamus to bring them back in the way that they did, and then just kind of put them on ice for a while, and then to reset them with the New Day was a. It was an interesting way to bring them back. It certainly wasn't the most heated way to bring them back, but here we are again, and you know, pancakes and such.
I know that they're not promoting John Cena on that show that much. However, and we'll see what the reaction is once you actually have the show, but this has felt like the least important John Cena has been like in over a decade.
They've done a hell of a job downplaying him. I mean, all throughout last year with SmackDown, I mean, over the last, my God, 18 months, whatever it's been now.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and look, WWE was always very good at making you disappear or making someone disappear, whether it be because they wanted to for a political point of view or they wanted to because they wanted to make you forget that somebody was injured. When they want to make you forget, you know, they have so much else that, that goes on sometimes that they can be sneaky good with that. And sometimes they, you know, they deserve a little bit of credit because there have been times where like guys like Batista and stuff like that have come back and it's like, you know, people have been lulled into a false sense of security where it's like you kind of know it's coming, but you almost forget about it because of the way that they play it. So John Cena has been a fantastic example of that. And nobody thought John Cena would ever go away. He has. Yeah, Nikki's back and. You know, and hanging out with Brie and everything. And John's obviously not far behind probably for more than just the Crown Jewel show. But, you know, they've done a really good job with that. And, you know, him and Bobby Lashley against Owens and Elias. I mean, it is the ultimate like. It is that's a match out of the 80s for me, like the Great American Bash is on tour. And like somebody's wrestling this guy and somebody else from the other team's over here. So then we're going to do this.
Right.
Hey, congratulations, Baltimore. This is the match you're getting that nobody else is. That's,
hey, you're getting John Cena coming back, though. Yeah, you know, it's,
yeah,
kinda like,
it's just what? It's a weird feeling match.
Is John Cena going to break out his sixth move of doom that he has been promoting on social media?
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Absolutely, he should. Yeah, that's a great time to break it out. And then, you know, you could add a seventh one once you come back to the States. You know, that you gain that during the whole thing with customs, you just picked one up along the way.
It just feels, yeah, it just feels weird that like you've got John Cena and I know that he's very busy with other projects and he can't commit to WWE right now, but obviously he's got time to be on the show, but they haven't mentioned him very much on TV building up to this. And I don't know.
Makes you think he's not be sticking around long after it's over.
He's absolutely not sticking around. He's going right back to China for a month, I believe. And I fully assume that he is going to be at WrestleMania. I wonder if it's going to be another one of those where he's just back for a couple of weeks and does Mania is gone, or could he be back at the Rumble? It just feels like even if he was going to be gone immediately after this, that they would make a bigger deal out of John Cena. Your biggest star of the last decade is going to be on this show. Hey, we haven't seen John in a while, but Super Showdown live on the WWE Network this weekend. You don't want to miss it. Here's all the matchups. Plus you get John Cena coming back and they haven't done any of that, and it just feels so anti or so different from what WWE normally does. We sit there and we talk about how they just drive stuff into the ground promoting it, and like, oh yeah, by the way, John Cena's gonna be there. It was kind of like one of those things for him. It's weird.
Hey, it's just look, for any, you know, even if he's working with all of WWE's most goodest friends in the whole wide world, he's not working directly with them. And
yeah,
if he wants to go out and he wants to host the Today Show one day, that's going to be great. You know, he'll be a great host sitting between, you know, Hoda and
Kathy
Lee. Kathy for the, he's for the
gonna,
last
is he
going
to take over for Alex Trebek on Jeopardy here in a couple of years?
I don't know if he can pull that one off.
That's
but
tough
like,
one. That's big shoes.
You know, him popping up like a Muppet doing lots of different things.
Popping up like, you know, a Muppet
related with NBC Universal. Or Fox would be, I mean, look, him having a half hour, you know,
could he be the next Mr. Rogers? Could we have, instead of Mr. Rogers, Mr. Cena?
No, but I mean, I could see them trying to build a half hour vehicle around him.
Absolutely.
And WWE, you know, they're going to be hurt that they're not the ones building that half hour vehicle.
Until he is the other agent that's going up against The Rock and Ballers?
I don't know if The Rock, you know what? The Rock doesn't need that.
Oh, come on. That would be great for ratings, man. Come on, man. Like, The Rock has got this next step, you know, and expanding his business and doing whatever. And then there's one guy standing like John Cena.
Rocky's at the top of that food chain now, though. That he's so far up. When you're at the top of the food chain in Hollywood, like, man, John Cena is at the top of his food chain, but he's way down the line in Hollywood. Like,
That doesn't mean that Cena is going to be on that show on a regular basis. He could be his foe for one season, and Rock can crush him.
See, if I'm Rock, I'm looking at one episode and crushing him by the end.
Oh, wow, just steamrolling him. Wow. At least get him on there for a cameo. Why not? That would be something. I think that'd be pretty funny.
Remember First and 10, but it's like when Marcus Allen was on there for a minute just so OJ could got to play him out. Like, he wasn't going to be the regular running back on the Bulls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nobody knows what I'm saying. God, I'm old.
Come on. Well, it's like it's like the people that we were outside of Seattle that didn't realize that Seattle had a basketball team called the Supersonics, you know, and then we saw the heat that generated on Raw Monday night when Elias and Kevin Owens talked about how Seattle doesn't have a basketball team, and the crowd booed them for so long that Kevin Owens was relishing in this so much. It was looking around, and Elias knew at that moment, I cannot even begin to sing my song, and we have to scrap that because we have so much heat going on here. It's too bad that they didn't like go to commercial break and come back and the crowd would still be booing right there. Instead, you know, they brought out Leo Rush to bring out Lashley to do a match. It was just like that was incredible heat that they got on Monday just for mentioning, you know, the former basketball team that got taken away from them and is now in Oklahoma City.
There were a lot of people that learned a lot about the Seattle fan base. Not feeling major league and always being hurt. And, you know, they're getting a hockey team. Cool. But basketball is still basketball. And
they love basketball up there. I mean, they love the Sonics. They love. And the Supersonics, what a great name. It's like this unique name. I mean, I know people, there's a lot of people that aren't NBA fans like us, but. Like, Kevin Durant was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics. Like, he was with the Sonics before they moved to Oklahoma City.
And there were, I mean, it's for me, it's not that far removed for us because we're old men. But, like, Gary Payton was there and with
Sean Kemp, man.
I mean,
Detlef Shrimp was reacting to this in a WWE.com article because he put something on social media. And I'm sure WWE asked him to do it. They communicated with him, but he was talking about, like, Renee Young was asking him, like, what are you going to do about this? And said, you need to have a match. I'm like, unless you're a really hardcore basketball fan, who knows Detlef Shrimp?
I know, because it's from an era where it's like, you know, you could if you either knew basketball or you could hear Dan Patrick going Detlef Shrimp, know, during like highlights. Like,
I love
you
that. Know, yeah.
You know, unless you're in Indiana, like, I don't know how many people it's like, man, yeah. You know, they're calling out Detlef Shrimp.
Love me some Detlef Shrimp, man.
Oh, my God. Well, hey, look, those Indiana Pacers teams back in the day, and I like the old, like, Reggie Miller. I was never a Pacers fan, and that was being a Knicks fan. You could never be a Pacers fan, but I was a big Chuck Person fan.
Ooh, you like the Rifleman? You like the Davis brothers on there, man, even though they weren't really brothers, but they were both Davises.
And, I liked how they played ball. I mean, that was the one thing with that team. I mean, you had Rick Smits in the middle and everything. As a foe for the Knicks and as a team to watch, you know, when they would go out there and they, like, they come to Washington, just watch them just, you know, massacre with the Bullets had going on at the time. And, like, you know, as a team, they were great to watch. And Reggie Miller, obviously, he was going to win that battle of wills with Pearson. And sooner or later, he was out of there. I think they sent him to Minnesota where he got to go get his nerves worked by Christian Laettner. But, like, those teams were really exciting. And that was just at a time when basketball coming out of the 80s and the breakup of, you know, the Bulls and the Lakers and the Celtics, and we got the Pistons started to rise, the Indiana started to rise. You know, Atlanta, you know, had some core pieces that, you know, could never really get it all around, but you had these other teams popping up with like 3-4 deep of guys who you really liked watching play. And Indiana was definitely one of those teams. And then later on with Detlef in Seattle, it was the same way.
You're a big Rick Smits fan.
Smith. What about Rick Smith? You get a dude that's like that
7 foot five, man. That dude was huge.
And it was amazing. And like being from DC, like we did the Minute thing, you know, and it was like when you saw Rick Smith, it was like, you know, it's obviously Shaq would have murdered him, but he was at that time compared to those other bean bowls. Like you compare him to like the Sean Bradley's and such. It's like he was a really, he knew his body and his body could hold up to the rigors of the NBA a lot better than a lot of these other dudes who happened to be like that kind of freakish tall.
He had some moves around the rim though. Rick Smith is a really good player.
He did. He was a good athlete that like he had his body. And I don't know if he ever played soccer back in the day, you know, where I think he was Dutch or wherever the hell he was from. But it was like, you know, he just seemed to be, when you put him on that list of guys who were over like 7'1", like, because obviously like Kevin Garnett grew and ended up being 7, whatever it was. But like, you know, those guys of that build who are, you know, were looked at as like, you know, your pre-Shaq day type of big man. Like he was by far the best until basically, I guess Yao Ming was probably, I guess is at this point. I mean, you know, going from like Shaq level, I mean, physically Yao Ming for his size, for how long he was able to hold up was, that was pretty amazing. I mean, him physically, especially when he got over here and there was weights and things like that. It was like, that was amazing. Actually, it really was amazing for someone to be that tall and that athletic.
I can't believe you haven't, even as a Bullets fan, and I say Bullets from back in the day, that's now the Washington Wizards. They were the Washington Bullets.
Yeah, I do this all the time. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. But I can't believe you didn't mention George Mirosan. 7'7", man.
Seven. Yeah.
That dude was a freak.
He was, and it's just his body. And there was a great,
he couldn't run. I mean, it was painful to watch the guy try to run up and down the court.
God, yeah. I mean, Bull and Mirosan and Sean Bradley and who are some of the other, I mean, freaks. There was, oh God.
Those were the big three that I can think of top of my head. Yeah, I
mean, just those freaks. And then, you know, then it's when you got Yao Ming and Shaq was, how big was Shaq?
Shaq was 7'1", 7'2". Shaq was just so muscular. It's just big. What?
You know who's somebody who we didn't mention, who, granted, great with his body, but this you can actually put directly to soccer and his upbringing, was Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because Hakeem was 6'10", but his footwork was incredible.
Oh, my God, silky smooth. And there's another great team from back in that era of, like, having some pieces of, like, you know, the Portland puzzle for a while, because I'm just thinking about when they've been both going to Houston together, like with Clyde Drexler and Terry Porter, and they had some, you know, they had some guys up there in Portland, and at the same time down in Houston, you know, trying to build around, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, and they had some really good guys down there as well too. So, and he ended up, I guess he did get his ring, down the line. But like, you know, the 80s and 90s, that the NBA is still fun now, but like the concentration of talent at that time was impressive. And that's the one thing that's lost with expansion with every sport. It's just that concentration of guys on a team that just are mighty. That's what makes, you know, teams like Golden State stand out so much, when you're able to draft and kind of from home get a group like that, you know, and grow with a group like that is really impressive.
Let's get back to wrestling, because people are going to kill us for that little rant that we just went on there.
It's basketball season. Come on.
I know. Preseason hoops just started up. Hockey's underway. We have baseball playoffs. RIP my Cubs. You know, yeah. I mean, it's an awesome time of the year. So I wanted to bring up Raw, because, I mean, I normally don't talk about ratings that much, but ratings were a big part of the conversation this week, because Raw did an average of just below 2.3 million. It's the second lowest number they've ever done. In fact, the third hour did just over 2 million. SmackDown did around a 2.1 for the entire show, which is a little bit lower than normal, but not too much. But the numbers are quite on a decline right now, especially for Raw. And I know they went up against a huge Monday Night Football game. I mean, the Chiefs and Broncos game was exciting. It came down to the end. That game did over 13 million viewers, which is the biggest rating they've done this season. WWE's already signed these new contracts, obviously, when it comes to USA Network and when it comes to Fox. But that's something I think that they really have to look at. And I wonder what they're going to do about this, because we can sit here and say, yeah, you're going up against Monday Night Football and you've got the baseball playoffs coming up here and whatnot. And yeah, you've already signed those contracts. But at the same time, the ratings are the ratings. You're always going to have to go up against something. And I think if it takes another step down, especially for Raw, that they might have to shotgun some storylines here. I don't know how they, what they do to respond to that. Because the thing that was really curious to me was not only did they do that dip in the third hour on Raw, but they ended the show with legends. You've got Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. You've got Kane, you got Triple H, and that didn't save that hour. Now, mind you, it was only like the last 10 minutes and you had everything else leading up to that. But, you know, what are they going to do now if those ratings continue to go down that direction? Does that mean we're going to get more legends? Does that mean they're going to speed up storylines? I mean, what do they do to kind of change that? And that's where I get the, could they shotgun some angles here to try to spike that number?
I don't think so. I think they just keep going the way they are.
They might. I mean, that might be what it is at this point.
When it comes to the ratings, it's not good. There are people that completely dismiss everything and go, "Well, the people have cut the cord and they're streaming and this and this." Well, you're in the bubble here a little much just because you did it, and just because you're, as Brian will, not Fritz, but Alvarez will always say, you are subscribing to a internet wrestling, a pro wrestling website on the internet. You know, you start niching here, and you're listening to a streaming wrestling show. Odds are you have different habits maybe than some other people, like your mainstream. And it's hard because you look at the money WWE is making for their product. You look at the shows that are beating them, which are the same new shows that have been beating them. They're still right in the mix with Love and Hip Hop and Teen Mom and Real Housewives and the Kardashians when they got some new stuff on and stuff like that. I mean, they're still right there with them. They still have better demos than a lot of those shows, most of those shows. In fact, the fact that they are so, you know, they can be associated with sports is the thing that's saving them, because they have more sports type of demos for their live viewership, you know, and that helps them immensely. So I don't know sometimes what to make of the ratings anymore, except for ratings still matter, because for all anybody says about, well, I cut the cord and I'm watching Sling, or I cut the cord and I'm watching
YouTube. Those numbers still count. They're still factored in. Count.
Yeah. Now where you WWE would kind of hand wave any complaints over that or fear over that is by saying, well, look where we're rated. We're still the number one. If you take the NFL out of the mix, we were WWE. Okay. Love and Hip Hop was number one, I think, in 18 to 49. We are 3 hours. We're still the top 3 hours, and we still beat baseball, Major League Baseball, wild card games during the day, tiebreaker games. And we still beat everything else on the roster, and they would be correct. And when it comes to SmackDown, you take everything out of the mix. We topped FX. We topped Bravo. We topped the new shows. We topped everything but one game at 8 o'clock that was, we were going head up against. And we whipped everything, and we still had the highest 18 to 49 rating. And they'd be right. And you have to kind of go, okay. But I'm looking at, and I know this is anecdotal evidence, and it does not hold up in court, but I look at my son, I look at Buzz, and I talk to people, and I talk to their kids, and I see what my friends, you know, my friends' kids are doing and what my kids' friends are into. And I just scratch my head and I go, you know, I look at that 50-year-old rating for WWE, and that's where all the money's coming from, you know,
right.
It's like that's. And there's a lot of people that really are living. They lived through a couple of eras. They lived through the Hogan era. They lived through the decline, and they lived through the revival again in the Attitude era. Then they came back with their kids, maybe in the Cena era. They've lived through three and they're still here. I don't know how many new fans they're building, and I don't know how much buzz they're getting, because something doesn't feel right here. But like, I just want to be honest enough, and I think just smart enough to know that I don't have the answers here, and I don't think anybody does. I think there's a lot of market corrections that need to happen, and not just with WWE. We saw it with UFC, with NASCAR, with lots of properties that make lots of money because they're live and they can get some things drawn out of them. if they don't get these numbers up and they don't get any new advertisers, and they don't have advertisers, they have very few of their own. Because everybody always talks about what they have now on TV. It's like, look at their network. What have they been able to draw to their network? Because they don't have anything. And they've been trying on that for a long time. And that doesn't make me feel real good. You know, if they bottom out and they look like crap on USA and they bottom out and they have a horrible run on Fox, you know, at Fox, they can look, Friday night's a horrible night for TV. They do a lot of MasterChef Junior and things like that at those times. But those shows also aren't anywhere near as expensive as what they're going to be paying to Raw. And if they look, it's way looking into the future, but if that doesn't go as well as things are, you know, as they want it to, and they're not building the fans up in 5 or 10 years, I mean, they're not going to be out of business or anything like that, but it makes you wonder. To me, it really does. And we got a long way to go on how these companies pay for product, what they look to invest in, what's important, because right now live is really important. Just being live is really important, but I don't know how long that holds on for. And I don't know how long these demos are going to hold on for, because even though they still are strong in comparison with other things, I mean, the facts are the facts. They have atrophied badly, and their fan base has aged dramatically and horribly and at a rate faster than real life. You know, they went from the Attitude Era with having, what, the early 20s, late teens, and now their best fans are in their 50s, in their mid-50s. And granted, I know a lot of this is skewed because of how they do some of this research, and them relying on basic TV and things like that. But still, you can look at that crowd. You can look at who they bring back and have to bring back constantly still from that Attitude Era, and you know something is really amiss.
I think they look at the numbers right now and say, okay, we're definitely paying attention. We don't like it. We're not going to freak out. We're not going to be overly concerned, but we will take note. We will point out, like you said, we beat most things on a given night, but the things that stand out to me are we can't get below 2 million. Okay. Once that happens, that's really sounding off an alarm. Like,
but they're going to,
they're probably going to though. But to me though, the bigger thing isn't like, okay, we got to get those numbers up right now. Especially going into these TV deals that are coming up next year. I think these networks, I would hope that they know enough, like, hey, numbers are going to continue to go down just because there's so many other programs that are out there. It's just how close are we, or how well are we doing on that given night against everything else? But to me, the thing that really stands out even more going forward is just a younger audience. Like, what are we doing to continue to grow fans, to get people that are teenagers or people that are young adults? You know, that those are the numbers to me that stand out more than anything than, you know, the overall ratings. I mean, those are obviously very important, but it's just like, I got to get people up that are anywhere between, you know, especially like an age of like 18 to 34. To me, that feels like a very important base, because that's a time where you're making money. You have disposable income, or you have some. If you're going to spend it on WWE, you're starting to make a family, and maybe you're going to have kids and introduce them to the product as well. To me, that feels like an incredibly important demo.
Besides your woman, you know, as you've gotten older, how many deep, passionate things have you discovered late in life?
Not many, nothing.
When do you think you were hook, line, and sinker a wrestling fan?
Oh, when I was a teenager.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I know I can go back earlier than that. I mean, it's just wrestling has always been there. And I think that's a lot of us. And I think that's a lot of the people in their 50s that are trying to get their kids and are looking at this, you know.
But you know what? It's a different thing, though. For us older guys that picked it up when we were a teenager, wrestling has changed so much over the last 30 years. To where it is now. I mean, the basics can still be the same, but it's just different with what some people go, I really like that, compared to what we really liked, because just how it's presented is so much differently. Doesn't necessarily mean one's right and one's wrong. I mean, we can argue for our, you know, what we prefer, but it doesn't mean that, you know, people are entitled to their own opinion. It's just the way that it's presented is just so much differently right now that sometimes you can't relate to some of that. Like,
you're right, people, the world has gotten smaller, and there is competition, intense competition for eyeballs and for your viewership. And there's so many different things out there that, like, unless you, I mean, you have got to be aggressive, because again, things come and go fast and kids' attentions come and go quick. You know, Roblox today, Fortnite tomorrow, the next thing the next day. You know, there are very few Maddens and things that, like, are forever and will maintain. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with WWE, but what I am saying is there's a lot of air being let into the container. And, you know, they are stale in a lot of ways. They do things that are nonsensical, that are tough, that basically insult their fan base, that are, if you take somebody ice cold and you drop them in, it's like, again, they have a lot of things working against them that are giving them their most, 3 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown is disgusting. And no one could become a new fan trying to watch any of that stuff. And the thing is, it's bringing them billions of dollars. So they really
exactly. Can't get, but like, they got current contracts for $2.35 billion. So,
They do. But, like, man, it's not going to get any easier for the spectrum of, I mean, everybody's going to have online TVs soon enough, where you are going to have, channel 56 is gone. If you want to watch, you know, the Brian Fritz and Mike Sempervivi show, you're just going to click one button and it's going to come up, and like, it's, everything's going to be on your time. I mean,
hey, that's a hot property too, man. I can't wait to get the residuals.
It should
from that.
Be. You know, Spotify giving Joe Budden all of this money for Christ's sakes. You know, it's like, they leave some for us here. But, like, you know, that's it. Like, if you wanted to listen to Joe Budden at, you know, instead of watching Today Show like you used to do back in the day, or Today, Good Morning America, and CBS This Morning, or whatever failure of a morning show they're going to have on today, like, you know, you can just hit something else, and you got literally a million options. And it's not going to get any easier. And what are you doing to make sure that you have these people at 10 years old, at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, that you make sure that you ingrain themselves in their childhood growing up? I don't see them doing it. And that's, again, it's only anecdotal. I'm not trying to say anything. And I'm certainly not saying I understand what has happened with ratings anymore and how demos work and any of that sort of stuff. I'm standing back and I'm learning as we go along. But something obviously doesn't feel right. You know, it doesn't look right for a longtime fan. It doesn't look right on TV for all that talent being there. It just, there are just too many things that just give you bad tidings.
Last couple of minutes here. Let's just do some quick hitters. Lana Rusev, Aiden English storyline. They did the angle on SmackDown where Lana got caught on camera saying, "I want you." What do you think the end of that sentence is?
To remain a team with me and Rusev, and I know where you're having hard times, and I know it sucks, but we'll get this thing back. You guys, you know, you screwed up. You cost Rusev those tag matches, but I still want you together. You know, I still want to be with you, or something like that. And then they'll play this out for a little bit longer. I think it's
because I thought it'd be something like, "I want you to leave the team for the betterment of it, because I don't want you around anymore."
Yeah, but it's like, you know, even with your wrestling logic that you have to, you know, you make excuses because it's wrestling. But it's like, still, this whole thing is coming across kind of whack. And
why is she like all nervous if she didn't really do anything?
Exactly. Well, that's it. And like, we have seen this song and dance so many times. And there are people, like, they want to see Rusev succeed. They don't care about Aiden English. And there are a lot of, like, if you say that to like Alvarez, he'll come up with a defense. It's like, it's nothing against Aiden English. Aiden is probably a really cool guy, and yep, married to Shaw Guerrero, all that stuff. Like, everybody likes Aiden English, and I think that's cool. And I think everybody that is close to wrestling is really happy, and it's kind of pissed off because they know he's going to flounder, and that kind of sucks. But there's far more people that are not as close as we are that look at this and go, "Can we do something with Rusev now instead of having this bullshit? And like, can we move this thing forward?" And that's, you know, it sucks, but like, they need to move something forward with Rusev. I scratch my head at his portrayal. Again, I don't know what I'm missing backstage. I'm not there, but like, him and Almas, and there's a handful of guys where it's like, if this is the best you got, let's come on.
Because, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing, it's like, it's not even being sold well. I know Rusev was kind of pissed off, and I guess they continued on the mixed match challenge, but it's like, what made all those ridiculous storylines back in the day work was how they were being sold by these guys. But it's like, everything is a wink and a smile, and you wait for the next thing. I mean, nobody believes this even for a second. They don't even seem like they're buying it out there trying to sell it. So, you know, if they're not, you know, making me believe, what do you want from me?
I was hoping that they would break out into "I Want You to Want Me," that song, but I don't think that's going to happen. They're teasing Ambrose leaving the Shield.
It'd be fine. I'm great with that, actually.
I know. That'd be fantastic.
Do it if you only knew to that song. That would be great.
So they're doing the tease of Ambrose leaving the Shield. I'm surprised that they've gone as far as they have. Like, they, when they did it the first week, I was like, okay, that gets to that story. But then they continued it so much on Raw.
God, on those two shows, they did, like, back in the day, 12 weeks of program.
Oh, exactly. Like, I don't know. I thought that Ambrose is going to leave the Shield. I feel like this has been a little bit awkward. I would guess that they're probably kind of button this up maybe at the Super Showdown show, but I'm kind of surprised by that and why they've done this so quickly, especially because the Shield just got back together. When do you think Ambrose is going to leave the Shield? If and when whenever they do the breakup?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Survivor Series is too far away or not. That might be a good time, you know, if you have that tag match there.
Survivor Series, or I would say right around the beginning of the year, like Royal Rumble seems like a natural time to do something like that.
Well, there was somebody asking about Drew McIntyre on the Observer Live show and said, well, when would you pull the trigger with him? I said, well, if you're going to pull the trigger with him, it's, to me, I would do it around Royal Rumble. That way you can maximize it. If you do it now, you're just kind of like, you're kind of, you know, it's just you're deep water till the end of the year because you got all this other stuff going on. So to me, if you want the most maximum impact, do it then. Either that or you do it right after Mania like they'll do on Monday Night Raw. So you have a new direction going forward, you know, from there. Same thing kind of goes here with Ambrose. To me, Survivor Series would be good because you can make it through till the end of the year. You got him going in the Rumble, and then you can have, you know, depending on what you want to do, you have him, you know, exploding into Mania where, you know, he as a heel, I'm sure, who turns dirty will be getting the advantage on most of his opponents in most situations. And when it comes time for that newly minted guy to get his, you know, comeuppance against a Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns, on the grandest stage of them all, why not? Because, you know, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose could probably put on a pretty good performance if given the opportunity at SummerSlam, or at SummerSlam, at WrestleMania.
Any way that Undertaker and Triple H does not close out the show at on Saturday at Super Showdown?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Because the only other match I could see being the main event slot would be AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. And they do not put that championship in the main event on any show.
No, not unless you want to. Yeah, and not unless you're changing the belt there and you're doing it for the specific reason so you can have somebody hold the belt up in Saudi Arabia and everything. I mean, or in
Australia.
In Australia, you know, that would be the only reason you do it there. So, no, I don't know how they get out of it. But I don't think you do it there.
That's the only match.
Yeah, I mean it's the same thing in Saudi Arabia when they do the tag match. I mean it would be allegedly do the tag match. It's very difficult for me because of the type of situation that it is that they don't do that. If it was WrestleMania, sure, put it in the middle and you know you stole it's for your other guys to move the thing forward. But I mean we know what these shows are and they're celebrations of the brand and they're basically, you know, sold shows. So, you know, because of that, I mean, that's who people are paying to see. They want to, you know, they want the purple color and the dong and all that stuff and, you know, give it to them. I mean, have the long staring at the end. I mean, so people lose their minds like the pose down. It'd be like having Hogan do the pose down in the middle of the card. Then we're going to intermission, you know, in the 80s. No, you close the show with that.
I'm not going to make too much of you saying the purple thing and the dong. Okay. I'm just going to leave it out. Last 30 seconds here. Because normally I don't talk about MMA here, but I will right here just for a quick prediction. Who do you like between Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov? If I always butcher his name this weekend.
I reserve the right to change this and probably people hear this. I've changed my mind 10 times. I'm going with Khabib. And
I want to say Khabib, but something keeps pulling back to Conor.
Well, his hands. I mean, we don't know how good of a shot Nurmagomedov can take. And Conor on his feet, obviously, we haven't seen them together, but we know his hands are good. And they have not gotten any worse leading into the training with the Floyd fight or any of that sort of stuff. Now, has he done much damage to himself in the time he's been gone? Yeah, it seems like he has. Now, will that affect his performance or his training or how he fights or any of that stuff? We'll have to see. We haven't heard any horrible stories coming out of his training camps. At least I haven't, you know, but we'll have to see how he performs. But Khabib is a monster, and he has been dying for this for a long, long time. And he has got a lot of people behind him and on his back that he doesn't want to disappoint. And when all things fall to even to me, because of my background, I'm a little biased, I will always fall to the wrestler. And I will definitely, in a situation where this guy has been out for quite some time and he has been working on his hands a lot and his wrestling is pretty good, I don't know. You know, him coming back to face Tony Ferguson probably would have been a little bit of an easier step than going in there and going right for Khabib. But it's a super fight, and I think it's not going to be the only time we see it, because I think no matter what happens, we're probably going to get a second fight out of this. It's hard for me to believe there won't be. And the reason I think that's going to happen is I believe, like I said, at this time, Khabib's going to win. So Conor's going to want his rematch. If this ends up being a fight where Conor dominates him on the ground or on the feet and peppers him and is able to stop the takedowns enough and makes him look like an amateur, we probably won't see a second fight. But I think that's the only way that we don't see it, because it's real hard for me to believe that Khabib is not going to drag him down. And just, oh man, his wrestling is far better than Conor's. But again, Conor's stand up, if he can catch him with one, we just don't know what Khabib can take right now.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a fun fight. Some keeps pulling me back to Conor, but I'm not gonna be surprised no matter who comes away with the victory on that one. I think it'll be a good show. So Mike, always appreciate it. Everybody can listen to Mike Semper VV weekday afternoons, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. And you can go over to the Wrestling Observer site, go to f4wonline.com to check out your work there. Plus, people can follow you on Twitter. It's at Semper VV. So Mike, thanks again, man. Hope we can do it again here in sometime in the next couple weeks if your schedule allows it.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
All right, let's get to the Q&A for this week. Of course, you can leave your questions on the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/betweentheropes. I put the post up there for the questions, and you can just leave your questions below. So let's dive in. In fact, you know what? I'm going to go with Francis first this week. So Francis is asking, what are you looking forward to for WWE 2K19? Will you be getting the Ric Flair Funko for 2K19? No, I am not going to be getting the 2K19 Funko. I always am interested in the game just from the standpoint of what did they learn from the previous year and what kind of adjustments they make the following year. And it's pretty incredible all the different characters that they get into the game and guys that they bring back. So that's pretty cool to look at. And I'm going to be checking that out here in the next couple of weeks. Do you think they could make SmackDown 1000 a 3-hour special? SmackDown 1000 is coming up. I believe it's 2 weeks from now. If I remember that correctly, I believe it is the October 16th. So, and they're going to be bringing back, Batista is going to be on that show, and we'll see what other stuff that they do on that show. So, I don't think it's going to be 3 hours though. I just don't see that happening. I think they would have announced that by now. I mean, never say never, but my guess is if it's going to be 3 hours, they would have announced it by now. Do you think we will see NWO at SmackDown 1000? No, I do not think that's going to happen, because I don't think they are ready to have Hulk Hogan back in the company. Could I be wrong? Of course I could be. I just don't see it. I don't think they're going to have Hogan on that show yet. One more for Francis. With HBK getting a bald cut, does this make him look badass, or could we see him with a Hogan hairstyle long term? He doesn't have a Hogan hairstyle. Hogan had hair, you know, around the sides and the back. It was only bald on the top. Sean looks like he's just bald everywhere because he just knew that he was balding and just said, that's it. I mean, there was footage of him getting a haircut. What was it? A couple of months ago, where he got his long hair cut off and he just had a short haircut. And I don't know what the choice was to go even further with it, but he does not have a Hogan style haircut, because Hogan is always refused to shave off all of the golden locks. Brad Mendenhall asks, with Shawn Michaels' involvement in the Super Show, it made me wonder if there were other stars in the past who could reappear. Can you think of anyone other than Steve Austin? I can't right now. I mean, Austin's name is somebody that fans have talked about a little bit, and I haven't heard about him being on that show. But outside of that, I mean, Batista would be somebody that I think would be interesting. But I mean, now that the Super Show is coming up on Saturday, it's too close. I don't think they're bringing back any other legends on that show right now. But I mean, Batista would be a guy that I would look at as somebody that maybe they would be interested in down the line for another Super Show in Australia, or maybe even one of the shows in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, we'll have to see what other guys that they want to bring in and how much money they want to spend. But Stone Cold Steve Austin feels like the biggest name if they could get him for an event. Bill Dixon asks, after a slow start, Jay White seems to have really come into his own since his debut in January. What are your thoughts on White, and how far do you think his Switchblade character can go in New Japan and beyond? I agree. I thought it was a slow start. I thought it felt a little bit forced when it came to Jay White being in that role, but New Japan wants to plan for new stars. I mean, that's their whole thing, is let's get some new stars going. Let's start working on that. And that's what they're doing with Jay. And he really is coming into his own. And they've got big plans for him. I think he's in that spot right now where they're putting him in bigger matches. People are getting used to him in that role. And then I think he will start winning some of these bigger matches in the next year or so. And Jay is a guy that I'm sure is going to get a lot of attention, you know, around the world from places, but I think he really loves being in New Japan. I think it's a great fit for him right now. He's in a really good spot. And I think New Japan has big plans for him going forward. So, you know, when we talk about in New Japan and beyond, I think right now the plan is for him to stay in New Japan. And I don't know when or if he's ever going to be the IWGP heavyweight champion. I could see that, but I think we're still probably a couple of years from that. But he's in a major role right there. He's in a good spot. And I think you're going to see him start getting some really big wins coming up in 2019 in New Japan. Joshua Bellomini, if I butchered that again, I'm sorry, Josh. If the WWE wants us to buy into the women's revolution, why should I take them serious if their own opinion, each girl is who she is because of her hair color? I understand the logic of why they do it, but if they are the same as the men, why does it matter what their hair color each woman has? Am I the only one that's bothered by this? Yeah, probably. I mean, that's one of the small little details. I think that's one of those things, too, where it's more the women that are doing it than anything, just because they want to do it. I don't think it's something that WWE is telling them to do. My guess is that they have to tell WWE if they're going to do it in advance to make sure that it gets cleared. But I would assume that at least, but I don't think it's something where WWE is saying, hey, we want you to be a blonde, or we want you to do this, we want you to do that. I think that's something that the women are doing and are choosing. I really don't have a problem with it. I mean, some of the girls like to have some fun with it. I know like Liv Morgan does. Carmella's been changing her hair color. She was brunette. I think she might be blonde again, because I just saw a picture of her. So I don't really have a problem with it. You know, it's one of those things. Last question, Mark Tracy. When is Luke Harper coming back? Will he be repackaged in any way? I fear that he will get released sooner or later because his tag partner can't stay healthy. I don't think that's going to happen when it comes to him getting released. I think unless his contract came up and he said, you know what, I'm going to go someplace else. I think the way that WWE looks at him, though, is more of a tag team wrestler. I think Luke, and it's nothing against Eric Rowan, and I think he likes tagging with him, but at the same time, I think Luke for a while has wanted to do a singles run, and WWE, for whatever reason, has not bought into that. They did a little bit for a while, but they went away from it, and they put him back with Eric once he was healthy. I don't think he's going to be repackaged either. I think the way they look at it is he is what he is at this point. That doesn't mean they can't do something with him as a singles guy. It's their choice. It's just they are not choosing to do that. So I don't know what the situation is going to be like when his contract is up, and if he said, hey, if I'm not going to get this kind of an opportunity here, maybe I will go elsewhere. Maybe that's something that he will choose, but I don't think WWE is going to release him. I think that they like him, and I think for the most part, he likes WWE. And I think for the most part right now, he's just mostly doing house shows. He popped up in NXT one time. So It's just figuring out what his role is going to be. And I hope they do something more with Luke Harper because I like the character. He's a really good wrestler. He's a really big guy. I mean, I don't think people realize how big he is. So he's somebody they can do something with. It's just they have to choose to do something with him. And that remains to be seen at this point. Thanks again to everybody for listening to the podcast. I'll wrap it up on that note. Make sure that you are subscribed to the Between the Ropes podcast. You can do it on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Play. Everywhere that you can listen to podcasts, you will find Between the Ropes. So please subscribe, rate, and review. Follow Between the Ropes on social media, on Facebook, facebook.com/Between the Ropes. On Twitter, it's at Between the Ropes, and you can follow me at Brian Fritz. And also, another special thank you to everybody that is supporting Between the Ropes and myself on Patreon. Patreon.com/Between the Ropes. $3 a month. You get the ad-free version of this podcast. So please support me there. And thank you again to everybody that is doing that right now. So appreciate everybody for listening again. I'll talk to you next week. Between the Ropes.